What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. This is Resistance in Residence, where we profile artists using their gifts to change the world. This week's feature is storyteller and social justice advocate, Tony Ciprian. Thank you for coming to the show, Tony.
Hey, we're glad to be here.
Tony, I'm going to start a little bit about you. Where were you born? What was growing up like? What was your family like?
I grew up in Los Angeles, Watts, California, single parent. And, you know, I was removed from Watts by age 15. I started, you know, by age 14, I was in and out of the juvenile system. A year and 2 months in county camp, 2 years in California Youth Authority. I paroled at age 17 and got locked right back up at age 17 and did 26 years, went in at 17 and came home at 43.
Those are massively formative years.
Yeah.
You mentioned something. I can't remember which link that I was looking at, but you talked about the relationships that you developed with the men you were incarcerated with that other folks can't, you know, if you haven't been there, you can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about it inside of the political context of the horrific conditions that you were incarcerated with them. But I wonder if you could just tug at that, because one of the things that society does is pretend that the folks that we send to concentration camps aren't human beings. And we try to push back on that as much as possible on this show.
Yeah. You know, a lot of guys that I met in prison, you know, Ron Pennywell, like he was like one. Well, he's like the second Black Panther dude I had met in the joint, you know, like that. And the first one was Geronimo Pratt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met a few Black Panther dudes, you know, and they were all about the education, you know. And I came into the joint. I was on some other shit, you know. I was on some LA gang stuff, you know. And these dudes were opening my eyes to reading material, like The Spook That Sat by the Door. I had heard about this book, and they was like, "Man, you need to read this book." And okay, I gravitated towards that, and I started gravitating towards like just being Black conscious, you know, because I didn't have that kind of, you know, vibe inside of me at that time, you know. So a lot of the men I met were basically a lot of dudes from the Bay Area who were really pushing a different line than what I was normally used to, you know, Black consciousness. And they weren't on the red and blue tip, but, you know, that was just the way that was. And I would gravitate towards, you know, bettering my mind and leaving a lot of foolish stuff behind. So I think a lot of guys for their guidance, because I grew up in prison. That's just the bottom line. I mean, I went, you know, a teenage boy sitting in San Quentin at age 19, you know, with like absolutely no guidance. And I think about that time, it's like, wow, man. You know, just, I thank God for the people I met in the joint. I didn't expect to meet people that you would like, damn, you cool. All right, y'all cool up here. I didn't know this. So, yeah.
I think about how many of our young Black men get funneled into prisons at 16, 17, 18, mm-hmm. as opposed to being introduced to Black consciousness, to art, to mentors, to life-giving experiences before we send them away to prison, or instead of, and I'm an abolitionist, instead of. What do you think, how do you think life would have been? I mean, you know, we walk the path that God sets us to walk, and you've done amazing things with your life. How do you think things maybe would have played out differently had you been afforded the opportunities that other communities are afforded? I know it's a cliche question.
Well, I mean, you know, I think about what I'm doing now. I didn't know that I was a performer. Well, I kind of knew I was a performer at it, because when you're standing around with partners that you know, and y'all exchanging war stories and things of that nature, and guys always was telling me, "Oh man, you should have been a comic. You should have been this. You should have been an actor." Well, I still didn't take that, seriously. It was just something that people were saying. And when I came home, I was guided towards that way. But had this been something that was recognized in me as a youngster, in those, like you said, those formidable years, yeah, I probably would have been doing that instead of doing what I was doing.
All right. So talk to us about discovering your artistic talents. How and when did that happen?
After I got out of prison, I was walking down the street with my wife and saw a sign in a window at a YWCA said improv classes.
I know the
And
signs.
I said, could do that shit, And next thing I know, my wife signed me up and she didn't tell me where we were going on this Sunday evening. We went down to a improv class and the teacher was like, "Hey, well, everybody just come on in and participate. And no, there's no sitting down watching. You got to participate." So I jumped up and started participating, and like a fish to water, I was in.
Do you remember what it felt like inside of your body? That fish to water? Do you remember what that
I felt
energetic?
like it was kind of like, "Oh man, I found my people." Right? I mean, like, is like, I don't know. I think like I would see like improv, like people doing like the Wayne Brady's and all of them dudes doing that. I'd be like, "Man, that shit look fun, man." And I never really I would laugh, and now I'm doing it. Okay. It felt good. It felt refreshing. It felt refreshing. It felt like I'm natural to this. It just felt good just to say something off the top of your head for the given, for that given moment. And wow, okay. And then, it's like the yes ands and all the rules to improv. I'm like with that. Like, okay, yeah, that's cool. I like all this, man. And one thing led to another. Like some people that were in my improv class were like, "Hey, I'm gonna go check out ACT." Well, shit, I should go check out ACT. And so I signed up for ACT and took a summer course there. And somebody said, "You should check out Berkeley Rep." So I checked out Berkeley Rep and signed up for some improv for storytellers there. And the teacher was like, "Hey, you should go to Moth Radio. And they do it right across the street here at Freight and Salvage." And I was like, okay, went there, and one of my classmates put his name in a hat that night and he won. I was like, I could do that. So the next thing that came around was the theme was Love Hurts. So
I'm smiling because I listened to that today.
I went to Public Works in San Francisco, and I told that story there for the first time. My first time ever stepping on public stage in front of any, a large audience like that, and it was like I told that story and I won. I was like, wow, I'm amazed, and people came up to me afterwards saying, "Wow, that story, your grandmother," and it's like they took little bits of chunks from things, and it let me know that people do listen to you. They do hang on to, something will inspire the next person, something from your story, something from your life. And that's what I do now. That's what I, that's what I picked up since this whole storytelling thing began for me.
I'm a staunch believer, Tony, in that art heals. I'm a staunch believer that like art didn't stop me from doing all of the dumb stuff. did stop me from dying while I was doing it.
You
Right.
feel me?
I do. I mean, I can count countless times where I wasn't somewhere that other people were because I was in rehearsal, right?
Right,
I was in the
right.
studio instead of down the street. In what ways has art been a balm for you?
Well, it has definitely been an outlet. Like I've had like all kind of jobs since I've been home. Like one of my first jobs was I worked at the airport for like when I first got out of 2011. I'm working at the San Francisco airport in the galley. So I'm working for this catering company, and I'm doing that, filling up the airline carts with the equipment, the food and whatnots, right? And I'm like, man, this is not. I know I said, man, let me out of prison. I'll do any job, man. I'll shovel shit in a three-piece white suit. You let me out of here. You know what I'm saying? But then I, as the reality of like, okay, you can do better than this job. So I found another job where I was a caretaker for a guy named Walter. And during that caretaking time, I grown to, he was bedridden, and I just had to pick him up and turn him and roll him at times, And he and I became friends. This guy was a scientist who he was part of like the atomic bomb thing, right? So for the Berkeley Labs, right? And he didn't want to be a part of that. And he was telling me his story, how he refused to be a part of making the atomic bomb and splitting the atom and things like that, right? And they blackballed him. So he said, to hell with being a scientist, I'm gonna go back and be a doctor. And he went back to medical, he went back to college, got a became a doctor, got patents on the human heart. And so he and I used to exchange stories, and I used to listen to him, and this dude was really amazing, right? And he died, and his sister had me speak at his eulogy and or at his funeral. So yeah, being around different people and being with people who I've often believed that people, places, and things. If you're around the wrong people, shit's gonna go wrong. And if you're around the right people, things do happen up to the good. So yeah, being in the world of art has been nothing but good for me.
I sit in rooms where we talk about people, places, and things myself.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you as a social justice activist. I mean, you talked about meeting the brothers, and you should just
Yeah.
know a lot of the brothers in San Quentin listen to the show.
Okay.
It's like the greatest part
Right,
of
right.
my life.
I used to listen to the I used to listen to KPFA. So it was like, wow, I got this invite to be on KPFA. Let's listen to this in San Quentin. So, I already know. I had to hold my radio close to the bars, hang a little wire out, 'cause I was in a spot that didn't barely got reception, but I was able to get it.
Them guys, they know. I love my brothers on the other side of the wall, so.
Well, to say I was a, to think of myself as a social justice advocate, nah, I just felt like I was doing, this shit was wrong. Like people were, my partner Jackie, he was out of Stockton. And Jackie died, man. It's like that was like the straw that broke the camel's back with me. It's like, oh, y'all just letting us die in here? We didn't get the death penalty. We got sentenced something to life. I had 26 years to life. Am I supposed to die in here? Or am I gonna walk out? When Jackie died, it was like he was like the fifth inmate in Solano within a not that much of a long time time period to die for things that were, preventable. He gave him early warning signs like, dude, I'm having chest pains. And they told him fill out a sick call slip. And prior to him, it was a guy, he went over to the dentist and had his tooth pulled. And He had an abscessed tooth, and that poison released into his bloodstream, and he died. And some other a Mexican guy died from some kind of bacterial infection that was preventable, you know. And two white guys died from heart attacks, and it was just like, man, this is too much. I can't take it. I went to my homies, and you know, it was like, man, what we gonna do? We gonna shut this thing down? It was kind of, you know, half-assed, but it worked. You know, we got together in all of a maybe a 12-hour time span, and we shut the joint down. We shut the foreyard down. That's and we got some results from that as far as them putting a medical annex on the yard. That lasted for about 18 months. And then it was back to business as usual. You know, and up pop Judge Henderson saying that, you know, hey, California prison system needs to be under federal receivership. The medical care in prisons are deplorable. So, I think of myself now as a social justice activist because of what I do now and who I'm with now. You know, two groups and Marin Shakespeare, Returned Citizens. I'm with them and I'm with FIP. And with both organizations, it's all about social justice. We telling our stories about us, who we were inside and before prison, some of us, you know. And so if I'm doing something right, if I'm telling a story that somebody can relate to and they can identify with, then I'm doing my part.
From your perch, in your words, talk to us about the importance of storytelling.
Oh man, the importance of it. It's amazing that, you know, like some of the storytellers that are a lot of the storytellers that are with FIP and Marin Shakes, I'm blown away by the stories. And it's like I lived inside of those places, and yeah, then they recall something like, you know, something we don't like. You know, it's just like one dude, Randy, he was talking about some things and he recalled a one name that I knew, and my homie Ray Ray. He recalled that name and how he was a tailor in San Quentin back in the days, you know, and Ray Ray made everybody's skull caps. And to this day, you know, you can't tell me that this man ain't the one who invented wave caps. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew what he was doing with silk t-shirts way back in the days. He was cutting them up and tying them and making people do-rags and everything like that. So yeah, storytelling is hypnotic. It's transformative. You know, it takes us on a journey, and I'm with the storyteller the whole journey. And yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I love storytelling.
When you look down the road, your dreams for where your storytelling is going to take you.
I didn't expect to be where I am with it now. So only, you know, I'm in the seat, but I'm in the passenger seat and God is driving, baby,
That's right.
on the rear.
That's
I'm
right.
just in the passenger seat.
That's right. What are you working on right now, Tony?
Well, I'm continuing to do my story, Jackie, and
Tell people what that's about. What's
Well,
Jackie?
so like Jackie is the story, like I just was saying about a guy who I met when I was in DVI, and he educated me because I had never heard of Juneteenth, and he educated me on Juneteenth by letting me know that his family was coming into the prison to play music, and I had never heard of Juneteenth, and he broke it down to me, telling me why it got started, how it got started. Oh, okay. And you know, and that story, Jackie, is like I said, it's about my partner who died in prison, you know. And I was doing a play called Train Story with Wayne Harris, and I called up another partner of mine and I told him what I was doing. He was like, "Oh man," he said, "that's great, you know." He said, "Man, you should tell him about how you shut the yard down in Solano behind Jackie." So I started formulating that story while I was doing Train Story. And yeah, so it is where it is right now. And I've already done an hour piece. I have it's a whole hour to it, but I'm only doing 30 minutes of it at the Berkeley Rep. And you know, a few vamps here, a few changes here and there, just to make the story a little more cohesive, where you understand that Jackie Pennywell, Felton Henderson, and a whole I play a host of different characters. You know, for the brothers that's listening on inside of those walls, man, keep your head up. And if I can get out, all y'all can get out, man. But see that, because I never thought I was coming on. I had 26 to life on a gang-related homicide. So yeah, keep your head up, man. I'm home. Y'all can come home too, man. That's all I can say, man.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA, that's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. Our Resistance in Residence theme music was composed by Jesse Strauss. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA, that's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listeners. If you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.